Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Jay Gutierrez. 7:01 in the a.m. on this Wednesday, August 12, 2020. Now let's say hello to Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News and Big Ten Network. Hello, Mike. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Oh, Mike, we're doing great. Wish we had something to talk about. Hey, we were asked for a long time for sports and things to talk about, and now our cup runneth over. So let's get to it. We were we talked about your column yesterday a few times on the show, and I know that you're always kind with your time with us on the Border Patrol. So we wanted to reach out and just get your thoughts on everything that's happening, and of course, as I mentioned, you cover the Big Ten as well, and so you know far more about the climate up there and what's going on. And so let's start there. What was your reaction? It wasn't unexpected, but it's still a slap of reality in the face when it actually happened. What was how did you react when it finally was official that the Big Ten and Pac-12 were going to be postponing fall sports?
Well, I think I was disappointed in much the same way that I was back on March 11th. And this is a devastating result. And this one maybe was a bit more avoidable, maybe not on the Big Ten's part, but on the country's part, to still be in the situation that we are relative to the virus. Nobody around the world is going around operating as they once did, as they maybe did 12 months ago. But there's a lot more, there's a lot more opportunity to do normal things, so to speak, maybe done in a different way, but a lot more opportunity to do normal things in other countries, in the European Union, in New Zealand, and a lot of different places than there is in Canada, than there is here, because we, as a country, we just have not succeeded in battling this virus. And so another thing that we would want to have as part of our lives disappears. And that's just from somebody from a spectator standpoint. I think of the young people in not just in football but in all fall sports who now face the possibility that they'll have no seasons at all in 2020-21. I mean, they still may, but they don't know. How can they feel secure that they will when the NCAA basketball tournament and the spring sports were called off back when the pandemic first hit, and 5 months later they're discovering that we're still in a position where this is an option. It's a preferred option of some, not a preferred option of others. But it's an option, and it's something that perhaps 5 months ago we would not have expected to be something that would be even considered.
So, Mike, you obviously are very closely tied in with the Big Ten. You do a lot of work in the Big Ten, and they were the first ones, I guess, to really, I mean, along with the Pac-12, I don't know, they were the first ones to make this decision from a Power Five conference standpoint. And I'm just curious, what do you think of the job the commissioner's done? How much say did he even have in any of this? Was this all the university presidents? And also, I'm curious what your thoughts are on the way Nebraska has reacted so far. Do you think that this could cause a fracturing of a team like, or a school like Nebraska from the Big Ten?
Well, I think that that's up to Nebraska. I mean, how much do they want to be a part of the conference? I think that has to be their decision. They were invited in I think it was 2011. They were welcomed. They seemed to this point to be a very happy member of the conference, happy to be a part of it. And I hadn't seen any sense that they were not. Their basketball program has been up and down, but the following of Nebraska basketball has been phenomenal. The football program has been up and down, but the following, of course, has been phenomenal for as long as I've been alive. And so I would have been under the impression they were happy. I'm not surprised that they were unhappy about the decision. I am surprised that they were unhappy enough to go public yesterday with their dissatisfaction in the way that they did. I was surprised by that. I think it's largely going to be up to them whether or not they want to be members of the conference, because being a member of the Big Ten there's a lot that goes into it, and being around it for more than a decade now in the way that I have working for BTN, there's a lot that goes into the Big Ten that does go beyond sports. I know that a lot of conferences try to present lip service in that regard. It's not just an athletic conference, it's more. And most of them, it's really not. It's really just an athletic conference. But in the Big Ten, it really is. There's a lot that goes on in the way they cooperate academically and that sort of thing. They take a certain pride in the way they operate. And so I do think that Nebraska, maybe even today, after having made the public statement, they may leave it at that. But I do think if they decide to go ahead and compete this autumn, that there quite possibly will be consequences to that.
And look, Commissioner Kevin Warren said that when asked if Nebraska could play football this fall, he said, not and be a member of the Big Ten Conference. So he says that if they did that, they would no longer be a member. So with knowing
before you go on, Nate had asked me about what I thought, and I lost track of that question in answering the second. I don't think that this was Kevin Warren's decision. I think his position here, his role was to provide the most information possible to the presidents and chancellors to make the decision. That's how the Big Ten has always operated. They have always operated on a presidential level, and they've taken advice in the past from Jim Delaney. I'm sure they took Kevin Warren's advice, whichever direction that went. But the one thing I will say that I was surprised that he chose not to answer that question when asked it a couple of times on BTN, and I believe in some other interviews, and then finally did present an answer. I didn't understand why he didn't answer that question immediately when it was asked. I thought that there should have been preparation for a question such as that, because Nebraska had been so vocal on Monday.
So how realistic is it? You said it's up to Nebraska. How realistic is it that they would make that decision and actually play football this fall against the Big Ten's wishes?
I don't think it's... I think you ask yourself, okay, I know you want to play, and I don't doubt that there are other schools. I would believe that there are other schools that at least at this point still want to play, but they've all chosen to honor the conference's wishes, the broader conference's wishes. Would you throw away Big Ten membership so that you can play, a game against Memphis? A series of games against teams at that level, SMU, because that's what you're up against right now. I mean, that's the best you can do. The American Conference is still active. They have not withdrawn from competition. Is it enough to throw away the Big Ten so that you can play those games, especially when you know that you can't fill, even if you could, play 10 home games just for the money? And, I mean, you can't. Can you? You can't play. You can't fill the stadium to do that. I wouldn't think. So I don't know that it's logical. I mean, talk about cost benefit. I mean, why would you do that? Why would you throw away membership in one of the most prestigious and lucrative conferences so that you can play a schedule of games against basically group of five teams? And maybe pull out one or two high-level non-conference games, presuming the SEC and Big 12 and ACC stay active?
Well, this you asked the question, and I'm just trying to answer it in my own mind because I don't know that there is a good answer to it, but... Scott Frost said what it could cost the athletic department and the university over $100 million not to play. And what I saw from Tom Chattel, he wrote a column in the Omaha paper yesterday indicating that it's never really been a natural fit for Nebraska in the Big Ten. And, you know, maybe they're having some second thoughts about if they could rejoin the Big 12, would they do so? What would you say to those things?
Well, and Nate, the money's not going to spontaneously generate it. The only way they could make back money at this point would be to sell out the stadium.
Right.
I mean, because and you could make some money on TV. You could probably go to the networks and say, hey, we're going to play this game. What do you give us for it? I suppose you can make some, but you're not going to make back that level of money.
Right.
And I think that $100 million figure is probably inflated because I don't think that their broadcast, and remember, we're down to broadcast revenue here. I mean, look, if Nebraska wanted to go rogue and have 100,000, 85,000 people in their stadium, I guess they could. I don't think they would. I mean, who would do that now? I don't think that the money that they're not going to receive as a result of this decision is recoverable in this window, in the fall window. They would. Let's just presume that the Big Ten does stage a spring football schedule. I don't doubt that would be more lucrative from a recovering income standpoint than whatever Nebraska could do on its own. Because remember, it's not impossible that by the springtime that all of a sudden it wouldn't be so out of line to have significant crowds. I don't know when we return to in-person audiences for entertainment events at a significant level, but I know for certain it's subsequent to a vaccine. It's not in advance of it.
Mike DeCourcy is our guest. Mike, for the conferences that have already postponed fall sports, what's this do to college basketball?
Well, I think what it does is it turns up the intensity and the heat on how to plan for 2020-21, and assuming there'll be any 2020 in there. And I think the first thing that has to be considered is, can we do a December-January bubble to get some competition in? I think that's the first thing that has to be considered. Would it be necessary, but can we do it if it is? I think that's the first thing that has to happen. I'm not sure that I agreed with the Pac-12 immediately taking that particular option off the board, the idea of playing in a bubble post-Thanksgiving. Most schools that are in person, and there are a lot more of those than people realize, most schools that have significant levels of in-person classes are sending their students home after Thanksgiving. They're sending them home for Thanksgiving, and they're not having them return until the spring semester, and that may be delayed in some instances from what it ordinarily would be. They may not rush them back in January. They may stretch that out a little bit. And so you've got all of December with no students on campus, all or part of January, and you could get a significant amount of competition into that window. In bubble situations, you take the Big 12 and you put them all in KC, for instance, and you rent out the Sprint Center for a month, and maybe Memorial Auditorium as well for as a secondary court, and then you play, and all the students are regularly tested in the way that the current NBA players or NHL players are. And they're not allowed to leave the bubble, so to speak. And I don't think at that point, when school is not in session, I don't think at that point that that's untoward. I don't think that's a lot of people object to that from the standpoint of, quote, they're not employees. But they wouldn't really be employees in that window. They would be athletes on break. So in a way that we couldn't do it in football, you might be able to do it in basketball, and both logistically it would be easier than football, and from the standpoint of bothering those who would consider it a professionalization of the athletes, because it wouldn't be.
We're visiting with Mike DeCourcy, and Mike, you obviously wrote an opinion piece earlier this week about the possibility that for college football players, and I would assume you would say the same thing for college basketball, since you were just talking about that, maybe the safest place is on the field, is on campus, and we've heard a lot of coaches like Dabo Swinney make a very similar argument. I wanted to ask you as a follow-up to that. I saw that in the news release by Ohio State, and maybe other schools have done this too, but I just happened to see this one from Ohio State, that they are saying with this cancellation of the fall, all of the student athletes will remain on scholarship. They will continue their testing protocol. They'll have access to the facilities. They're going to have access to comprehensive mental health services and tutoring and things like that. Does that address in your mind kind of what you brought up, that maybe this is safer for a lot of these players to be in that structured environment than to be out of it, while eliminating the dangers of possibly playing the sport in a pandemic? Or how do you feel about that? And do you think most schools are going to be willing to make those guarantees for their student athletes, even if they're not playing in the fall?
I've always thought that the dangers of playing the sport were over-dramatized, because you would endeavor to control the boundaries of the playing surface, so to speak. Your biggest job in trying to stage an athletic competition, your biggest job at this circumstance is to assure that everybody who enters the playing service is virus free. Now, I realize that you can't be 1,000% sure on that, but you can pretty much be sure that in a fraternity party or an off campus party or something like that, that no one's in position to secure that boundary. And that's where all the problems, virtually all the problems that have developed relative to college athletes, and in many cases not college athletes, that's where the problems have developed. I mean, the University of Washington had more than 100 positive tests in their fraternity group back in June, more than 100. We're not talking about athletes or playing hoops or whatever. We're talking about just people who are members or residents of fraternities testing positive. The circumstance at Louisville, where they had more than 20 athletes test positive, was traced to an off-campus party that was staged by several members of the soccer team, and they ended up disciplining multiple members of that team as a result. So I've always thought, and I'm not saying that the athletic competition, it's not, if you send 22 untested athletes on to a football field to play football, that there's not a possibility of transmission. I would never say that. I'm just saying that that's a place that you can endeavor to control, whereas the rest of life, it's been a much greater challenge, and so. That was the position that I took in the column. And so to continue testing and to continue training and all those sorts of things does address it to a large degree. But I believed that one of the reasons why you had issues in the summer at various campuses was because competition wasn't imminent. There wasn't as much to lose.
Right.
And that competition no longer is imminent because it's been postponed. And so I think what the level of problems that we've seen at various schools, it's the potential to continue is still there, and I think that the potential would be diminished if competition were in place. I realize that we had it happen with the Orlando team in the NWSL. We had it happen reportedly had it happen. With the Miami Major League Baseball team, and we had it happen in a microcosm over the weekend with a pitcher for the Cleveland Indians. Mm-hmm. But So it's you know, you can't be 100% sure, but there were consequences in all of those circumstances. Now there won't be, and that's at the schools that have postponed football. And I think that it's not the direction that I, at least at this stage, that I would have preferred.
Mike DeCourcy is our guest. Mike, in your opinion, do you think the Big 12, ACC, and SEC will play football this fall?
Yeah, you know, I think that's an interesting question. And one of the things that I'll say is that at this point, they're all on board with the idea of competing. And I think in order to get to the reality of competition in late September, I think they're all on that schedule now of starting in late September. I think in order to get there, they have to get there with some grace, some good fortune, that they don't have a number of outbreaks. That the athletes now, maybe they look around and say, if we do this party here, we're going to end up in the same place the Big Ten and Pac-12 are, and we don't want that. So maybe they're on higher alert as a result of what's happened elsewhere, and maybe that helps them get to the end of September and feel more confident as leagues to go ahead and compete. And it also, it would be helpful if the country would start to turn in a better direction relative to the virus. Because we're 5 months into this, and we are not in the position that the European Union is, that New Zealand is, and some other countries. We are well behind. And so I think that if we make progress over the course of that period, maybe to the beginning of September or the second week of September, a month from now, if we make some progress, all of those leagues can feel better about going forward and competing.
Mike DeCourcy is our guest. Mike, do you think for a brief time there, so much has changed over the last 3 days, there was this seeming attempt by some of the players with their "We Want to Play" to make some demands to have like a, I don't know, some people use the word union or a players' organization, to where they have more of a voice when it comes to things like this. Do you think that will go anywhere? Do you think that this whole amateurism model will fundamentally change in any way as a result of this pandemic? Or do you think that once this pandemic is over, we're just going to go back to the way things have been in college athletics?
Well, I think that we already were on the way to significant change relative to name, image, and likeness. And when that begins, I think that some of the player discontent will be mitigated. For those athletes who start to see an income stream, it'll look like an even better deal than it already is. And I think for those who don't believe it's a good deal, you know, I have a lot of friends who are still making student loan payments. Maybe none of my classmates, I hope, but I know, you know, I have a lot of younger friends in the media I have one friend who just this past week, and I mean, he's married, has a kid, has been, you know, in his paper for double digit years, and just made his last student loan payment. So it is a good deal now. It should be a better deal, and it will be when name, image, and likeness comes. And I think the one thing of all the demands that were made by the players groups that did issue demands or requests or whatever, the one that resonates with me is the postgraduate medical coverage. If I remember correctly, I think it was the Big Ten suggested that 6 years after your eligibility is complete that you should be covered medically. And I think that is absolutely ideal. Because for one, as you're trying to get a job, once you're out of competition, and not every player competes in the NFL or NBA or MLB or whatever, more of the high-level players than the NCAA would lead you to believe do play at that level than they say, but not all of them. And so they have to go out and get a job, and sometimes it's tough to get a job early in your life, and you're done playing football, and you know, maybe you got a nagging knee problem and you don't have any medical coverage. You're not on your parents anymore. That's a tough deal. And I think that should be covered. You got that knee problem because you were playing football for old, big old State U. And so I think that should be covered. That's one thing that, with all the money that the NCAA does have, that the member schools do have, especially the higher level schools, I absolutely think that's something that they should go create a group, contract with an insurance company. It may not be not everybody's going to have the best experience with it, but they'd all have the opportunity to have the coverage that they deserve and that they've earned. And I would really like to see that happen.
Mike, thank you very much for the time today. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon, my man.
Okay, guys. Always a pleasure.
That is Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News and Big Ten Network. And I'll let Mike go because I see he has a 7:30 appearance, 7:30 on 7:30 the game. So
the game.
Exactly right. I think I was 40 when I made my final payment, my student loans, I believe. 40 or close to 40.
Well, those payments are just getting bigger and bigger, too. College is so much more expensive than when we were in school.
I paid it off, man.
Don't tell me
my payments are getting bigger.
Good for you. I mean, for kids that are going to college right now. As expensive as it was when we were in school, it's crazy how much more. I mean, I look at like how much tuition is at Kansas compared to what it was when I was in school. It's like literally 10 times what it was.
Study your asses off, kids. Get scholarships. Back after this on WHB.